Fasten your seatbelts and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Joe Biden is in a commanding position to win the Democratic nomination. He won big on Super Tuesday, and this week cemented his lead with wins in Michigan, Missouri, and Mississippi. But the race isn't over yet. Wisconsin went strongly for Bernie Sanders in the 2016 primary, and all eyes will be on us leading up to our April 7th primary. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Rob Menser, and I'm in this week for Shireen Seward. We're talking politics ahead of Wisconsin's presidential primary, and there are plenty of politics to talk about. There's the Democratic nomination race, of course. A month after that, we'll have the special election in the 7th Congressional District. In July, there's the Democratic National Convention in Milwaukee, and you better believe that Wisconsin is going to be blanketed by presidential candidates and surrogates all the way to November. My guests today are Mosinee Mayor Brent Jacobson, who is active with the Republican Party. Welcome, Brent.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Also here in the studio is investigative journalist Naomi Coles of WSAW-TV in Wausau. She's been tracking the 7th Congressional District race closely. Thanks for being here, Naomi.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And joining us from the Lacouture Reservation in Sawyer County is Paul Demain, the former longtime owner of News from Indian Country. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Good morning, and thank you for having me as well.
All right. And we'll take your calls and questions, too. You can join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. So let's start with the Democratic presidential primary. So Bernie Sanders lost in Michigan by 20 points this week. It's a state that he won in 2016 and one that he needed to win to turn this primary race around. So right now, the website 538 has Joe Biden as a 99% favorite to win the Democratic nomination and a heavy favorite in Wisconsin's primary. It's a big, big change from 2016 when Sanders won in literally every county in Wisconsin except Milwaukee County and won the primary overall here. So the big question is, what changed? So Naomi Coles, what changed?
What changed? That's a good question. I think honestly, you have to think about voter attitudes and what's right now. Back in 2016, we didn't know what the next 4 years were going to look like. You know, at that point, you know, President Donald Trump went on to win that election. Now, looking back over the past 4 years, I think attitudes are shifting as we kind of think, how do we want the country to go in the next 4 years? And I think that can contribute to kind of the shifts even on the Democratic Party side. When you look at the Democratic Party and the way the primaries have been going up until now, you're really, in my mind, you're seeing two dramatic shifts. You're seeing a lot of people, you know, there's this coalition behind candidates like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren to some extent, that far progressive side. And then you're also looking, people are looking for the candidate to beat. Electability is a really big factor right now. And I think that people's attitudes are shifting to some extent from what's representative of progressive values to how can we beat Donald Trump from the Democratic perspective? How can we beat him in this election? And so I think that could be kind of informing some of those shifts in position as people congregate behind a candidate like Biden, who they might perceive as having that electability, that name recognition, and that moderate position that could attract voters from across the aisle on the Republican side who might be tired after the last 4 years from what they've seen.
So, Paul Demain, so you've been active in Democratic Party circles for many years, and I believe you supported Sanders in 2016. What do you think happened to Sanders' campaign this year, and why wasn't he able, or why hasn't he so far been able to build on his 2016 base of support?
I think you're going to have continued changing dynamics. I think a lot of people are looking forward to see what happens in the upcoming debate. The path to the nomination is a very difficult one at this particular point. But you want to remember that I think we started out with something like with 28 candidates in this year's race. And part of the reason you have that many candidates is because people believe that Trump will be a one-term president. They feel that there's this opportunity. And yet at the same time, I think that the constituency of the Democratic Party and the country in general, with a lot of independents and even with some Republicans, are concerned about the direction of the country, the direction of the individual in that office, and are looking for someone who is electable. And so therefore, Bernie took a lot of dissing on the trail over this time. So has Biden. Are they going to be toughened up by this whole thing? But I think the next debate coming up is going to be something that will define those tracks. At this particular point, a lot of these candidates who've dropped out, and Bernie has to consider what kind of role they might play in the future. So Bernie's made the decision that he still wants to go on and debate the issues so that people can see the clear distinction. But I also think that he's setting it up this point that if Biden does take the nomination, that the ideas and goals that are supported by a majority of people in the country are guaranteed to be somehow initiated in place, whether or not it's free Medicare for all or whatever it is, or affordable health care or affordable education, that there is discussions on those issues in this country.
Right. Well, so what are the major divides within the Democratic Party is between older and younger voters, right? And Sanders is extremely popular with younger voters. Naomi, you said that not to scoop anything here, but you mentioned before we started that you've been reporting on younger voters in central Wisconsin. Do you see evidence of this? Do you see that? Have you in your reporting seen that split among Democrats between younger voters favoring Sanders and older voters maybe being more likely to favor Biden?
Now, to clarify that again, as you mentioned, these are just student voters. And as you mentioned, I have been talking to a number of student voters in the past week as I prepare to kind of produce a special report on that that's coming up. But These students are very politically active students in north central Wisconsin, however, and many of them also come from this area. So they're not just going to school here, but they're from here. And to be honest, I didn't hear that coalition behind Sanders. I heard a wide variety of positions ranging from Sanders absolutely all the way over to Republican side. But to be honest, a lot of them – one of the main trends that I heard coming out of these conversations and some really well thought out great positions from some of these – and these are a lot of them first-time voters. But they're looking for unity. They're looking for someone who can unite a very, very divided political landscape. And so while there are positions that are important to them in some degrees are all over the map, the one thing that is uniting them is that they want someone who can bring them together. And again, as a caveat, these are voters in north central Wisconsin. This might not be representative of, say, Dane County or Milwaukee County and students down there. But by and large, I heard a range of positions, including positions for candidates who have since dropped out. I did talk to a Yang supporter as well. But yeah, I'm really seeing that an issue that's important is unity. And not necessarily just that broad support for one candidate that I might have expected going in.
So we're going to talk about the general election in a bit, but for the April 7th primary, there increasingly are some questions about how competitive it will be on the Democratic side, but there's no question on the Republican side that it will not be competitive. Back in January, Wisconsin Republicans decided against allowing primary challengers onto the ballot. So Republicans on April 7th will have one choice. It's President Trump. Brent Jacobson, do you think that Republicans will show up to vote in a primary where there's not even a nominal challenger?
It's an interesting question. As you've been watching some of the other earlier primaries and caucuses throughout the country, starting with Iowa, moving to New Hampshire, some of the statistics that came in comparison to presidents who were up for reelection, Obama in 2012 and Bush in 2004, Republicans still came out and voted for Bush. Democrats still came out and voted for Obama when he was up for reelection. But Trump's numbers were up substantially in those areas of Republican voters coming out to vote when he effectively has no competition. And it'll be interesting to see if that carries on or if it was just an early spurt. But I think it's a signal that the enthusiasm from his base, that I certainly got him elected in 2016 is still there and it's still strong. And, you know, Wisconsin oftentimes is unfortunately not relevant by the time that we get to the primary in Wisconsin just by virtue of the fact that it's further down the road. So I will be interested myself to see if that enthusiasm comes out. I feel the enthusiasm is there, at least in central Wisconsin, where quite frankly, if you look at 2016 I would be shocked if we don't see President Trump make another visit here to central Wisconsin, because I think especially Marathon County was the game changer in 2016 that put Wisconsin in the Trump column. So,
right. Well, we'll talk about the 7th congressional district race later in the hour. But I mean, an important thing always to remember is in 2016, the 7th congressional district gave Donald Trump his highest margins in Wisconsin, and Wisconsin was extremely close state in 2016. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be a task for President Trump to not just win in this sort of rural Wisconsin, but to really like crush in rural Wisconsin to be able to have the high margins, something like what we saw in 2016. I do want to, before we go into break, there'll be more to say about this, but I do feel like we can't have this conversation right now and not talk about the potential effects of the COVID-19, which is like upending everything right now, from financial markets to the NBA season. So, you know, we've done substantive reporting. We continue to do substantive reporting on this issue. People can go to WPR.org and see that. But like in for this show, we're talking about politics and we're talking about elections. So I you know, that's not as important as washing your hands and social distancing and potentially canceling public events. But like there is going a secondary effect is going to be the potential for political effects. Naomi.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, Paul, please. What do you see?
Well, I was going to say, I think at this particular point, everyone's really encouraging people to go and utilize the state registration system, myvotewisconsin.gov, and ask for an absentee ballot, especially if you have elderly relatives or other people who are special needs. But that would be the prudent thing to do today, is to ask for your absentee ballot or ask it on behalf of someone else. It's definitely going to impact, I think, these political elections here over the next couple months. And I think it's going to give us a chance to work with those digital systems to make sure that they function properly. I've used it myself. I don't know what the percentage is, but I think at this particular point, the one thing we can do is to begin to prepare ourselves for that potential that people are going to be quarantined and at home, and it's going to be much more difficult to get out and vote.
I was at the governor's conference on emergency management in Wisconsin Dells on Tuesday, and spoke with the head of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, the administrator there, and she said that that absentee voting has already been on the rise, and that clerks already were expecting to see improvements on that, increases in absentee voting ahead of this year. But I think it is only prudent that to think that that's likely to be sort of supercharged by people's concerns or the potential risks. Let's take a break and we can come back to this, and we'll come back to talk about more presidential primary politics and more 7th congressional district politics. This is Route 51 on WPR. A note for listeners, beginning next week, Route 51 will move from Thursday mornings to Friday mornings at 10 a.m. on the Ideas Network. That means next week's show happens at 10 a.m. on March 20th. You can also join today's conversation by calling 800-780-9742. I'm Rob Menser, in for Shireen Seward, and this is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio.
To all those who have been knocked down, to all those who have been counted out, left behind, this is your campaign. Just over a week ago, many of the pundits declared that this candidacy was dead. Now we're very much alive. Thank you.
And we're going to, you know, people say, how do you unify the American people? We're divided. I will tell you how you unify the American people. You give them an agenda that all working people support. That's how you do it.
We are one step closer to sending the first Native American to represent Wisconsin in Congress and the first woman ever to represent this district. Representation matters, and we must seek to achieve a government reflective of society. And we are one step closer to reclaiming this seat and having real representation for the people, not the corporate interests.
We've been able to reform government in Madison and make it more responsive to the citizens of our state. And I'm so proud of the work that we've been able to do there. And that is why I want to go to Washington, D.C. That same common sense that we've brought to Madison, they need a dose of it out in Washington, D.C.
We're back on Route 51. I'm Rob Menser in for Shireen Seewert, and we're talking 2020 elections and politics today. My guests are Paul DeMaine, Brent Jacobson, and Naomi Coles, and we'd like to hear from you, too. The number to call is 800-780-9742. That you heard clips from primary night in the 7th Congressional District from Trisha Zunker, the Democratic candidate, and Tom Tiffany on the Republican side. So let's talk about the 7th Congressional District. This is our district. It is geographically enormous and encompasses central and northwoods Wisconsin, all of the northwestern sort of quadrant of the state. And it's mostly a rural district, and that's been sort of the key for Trump's success here. There's a special election coming up very soon. It's on May 12th in the 7th Congressional District after former Congressman Sean Duffy's resignation in the fall. And this is considered a safe Republican seat, but in a special election, you can see surprises. Brent Jacobson, you thought about running for this seat. What made you consider that? Why didn't you run? And what do you think is important to voters here?
Well, I did consider running for a very brief time. I've always had an interest in public service, and I've always followed issues at the federal, state, and local level. But, you know, after thinking about it briefly, I've been through primary elections before. Primaries are tough. They can challenge friendships. They can challenge partnerships. You put a lot of time, effort, and resource into it that could better be spent in a general election. And as you know, I'm a Republican. I'm proud of that. And I'm involved in the party. And having been through that process firsthand and seen what it is in a different race, I wanted to get behind a candidate that I wanted to see be able to put the resources into the general election, and I didn't want to have to see our party go through a primary. We did have one, and actually turned out to be a very good discussion between the candidates. We had two very good candidates in that race. I became good friends with one of them, actually, working on his campaign. But that's why I ultimately decided at the time to not throw another hat into the ring. And I forgot what the rest of your question
was. What do you see as, you know, what do you think, using your window and working on that campaign and just being a elected leader here in the district, what do you think are the important issues? What's going to matter to people in the special election?
Certainly we have a lot of issues at the federal level that you're always going to hear the candidates talk about, gun control, abortion, the economy. I am interested in hearing from the candidates a lot more as well on issues that, believe it or not, there is a federal component to local issues. We have issues here in our state with broadband access that has a federal component to it. There's a federal grant program for that that's very difficult to get access to for a number of reasons. I'd like to see how our candidates can work on that. Obviously, the dairy industry continues to be a struggle. We've had a historic number of smaller dairy farms that have had to go out of business. These are generational farms. And there's certainly federal components to that. I'm interested in hearing the candidates continue to talk about from how are we going to grow our dairy industry in a new economy, and that means diversification, expanding our markets, trade deals with the USMCA, the phase one Japanese deal. How are these things going to help us competitively? What other things do these candidates want to see that can help us here in central Wisconsin with the dairy industry? Infrastructure. I want to hear talk from the candidates about that. How are they going to get dollars back to Wisconsin for infrastructure assistance? Because at the state, that continues to be a struggle to try and help local governments fund our state highway system, fund our local roads. And the more assistance, just like at the local level, the more assistance I can get from the state makes my job easier. And I think the state representatives would agree with me, the more assistance we can get from the federal government makes their job easier. So there is a lot of local issues that have a federal component to them. And I'm interested in hearing on some of those nuts and bolts issues. Of course, we always hear about some of the major issues that I mentioned, guns, abortion, the economy, those kind of things. But let's not forget, all politics is local. So I'm always interested in hearing about those issues, especially because I'm a local elected official.
In the President Trump remains quite popular in this district, and especially in rural areas. And in the Republican primary, it was quite apparent that the two Republican candidates really made their support for President Trump and his agenda central to their campaign pitch. That's probably what you would expect in a partisan primary, right? Just to stay with you, Brent, for just another minute, do you think that there's a, you know, does Tom Tiffany need to like make a sort of general election pivot now? And or is the nature of the sort of makeup of the district such that he kind of doesn't?
Well, I'd have to defer to Senator Tiffany on that. Certainly both the candidates were very supportive of President Trump, and I don't see Senator Tiffany wavering from that. I think he's genuine on that. He supports a lot of the things that President Trump does, and he's continued to say that he's going to be an ally of President Trump. And I think you'll see that continue to resonate throughout the general election cycle because knowing Senator Tiffany is a very principled person, and if those are the positions he took in the primary, you're going to see that continue, I think, in the general election.
So on the Democratic side, Trisha Zunker would be the first Native American congresswoman from Wisconsin and only the third Native American woman elected to Congress from anywhere. Paul DeMaine, what has been the reaction in the Native community or various Native communities in this district across the state to Zunker's candidacy?
Well, I'm certain that the Native community is interested. We have Republicans and Democrats and independents in the Native community, and so you have to look at the politics through that view as well. But I think that we're looking for a candidate that can work on some of these programs that I think there are universal support, and that is that we need to work with the Affordable Health Care Act and do something different about that. We've got to provide good educational opportunities. Gun control is going to be an issue that needs to be debated. With the types of shootings that have gone on in some of our communities, there needs to be the implementation of red flag laws and other things that help make our communities and our students feel safer in those environments. We're always going to be concerned about making sure that Northern Wisconsin has decent jobs. The level of those jobs and what kind of jobs needs to be the discussion. Are we going to embrace renewable energy? Are we going to embrace the old fossil fuel industry that's on the verge of collapse now with the gas war going on between the Soviet Union and Saudi Arabia? But I'm a little bit concerned about how someone who wants to be concerned about local control is going to Congress at a time when the individual is responsible for supporting a lot of laws and took a lot of local control away from our communities in terms of shoreline ordinances and the abilities to control mining operations in and around our area and those kinds of checks and balances that we previously had. Surrey County is a purple county. It supported Obama for two different terms. In the last primary, interesting, Surrey County went to Trump on one side and Bernie Sanders on the other. So you can see that there's a pretty broad divide in that it's the independents within this community that can move back and forth. And that's why even though Trump took the 7th congressional district by 20 points in the last election, which you would think it would make it safe, Vice President Pence is coming in. And there's a lot of dark money already in this candidacy in this particular race. Club for Growth, Americans for Prosperity did several mailings, so far. Tiffany and Church raised probably about 10 times more money than Zunker did in the race. And so the campaign is definitely being outspent. But I think the presence of Pence coming into the state to help support the Republican candidate says that they don't feel that the district is safe and that it can move back and forth, because it has in the past. It went from Obie to Duffy. There's the possibility that under the right circumstances, and certainly some of the things we're facing in regards to the pandemic now, and a president that calls the virus a hoax and global warming a hoax and evolution a hoax and those kinds of things, there are dynamics that could really change not only the Democratic primary yet in the next couple of weeks, but the dynamics that could change the presidential race as well.
Sure. Well, let's talk a little bit. Let's return to the coronavirus issue, because I do feel like there's more to be said on the way the effects that might have. So there's an effect on absentee voting that we discussed, but one of the largest effects is that we are going to see a serious economic impact. We're seeing it in the stock market now, but it's not just that. The cancellation of these public events has sort of economic ripple effects, and people's loss of tips for service workers, then they don't have as much to go and spend themselves, and so on. And I don't know how long this crisis will last, and I don't know how acute the effects will be. I don't think any of us do, but there will be effects. Up to this point, the strong economy has been one of President Trump's biggest selling points politically. Naomi, do you think, is this a moment of, is this a real risk for the president, or is this, going to be something that blows over, or somewhere in between?
When you back up a few months when impeachment was a big headline, right? A lot of people were saying impeachment's could be what defines this election going forward. And what we saw from polls is that really actually increased a lot of interest. Now, to be honest, I was thinking about this last night, and I really think we could potentially see coronavirus, I think, become one of those defining moments in this election as we go forward into it, rather than some of the headlines we saw previously. Because, like you mentioned, for all the issues that you mentioned, economy, I mean, that has been the strong point for President Trump. That's a big deal. But right now, people are afraid. People are worried. You think about his address to the nation last night, where there were some variants in the actual policies from what we actually heard. And when people are afraid and the information isn't there, I think that that's going to define how people vote. And when you think also, to pivot a little bit back to the congressional election, what's one turnout is always a concern in primary elections, and especially when you think about we have two coming up. We've got the one in April, the presidential primary, and then we have to get people back out to the polls again in May. Now, what drives turnout? Enthusiasm. What drives enthusiasm? Campaign events. So I think Paul mentioned we have Pence coming. Well, we just heard last night that President Trump is canceling his event in Milwaukee. Could we, are we going to see Pence come? I think that's a big question mark today as we watch as these, politicians react to this news. How are they going to respond with their campaign events? Pence coming to Wisconsin, that's a big deal right here in Rothschild, I believe. That would be a huge deal for Tiffany's campaign. Is that going to pan out? What effects is coronavirus going to have on campaign events as the leaders of the campaigns decide what's best for the community? How are they going to respond to this pandemic? And that's going to drive then the enthusiasm. Can we get people enthusiastic enough if people have to start canceling events, if that becomes a potential rescheduling? Does that drive a lack of enthusiasm? Does that result in poor voter turnout? And I think that for me is one of the big questions thinking about the May election in particular.
Brent Jacobson, you may have a window into this in your capacity as mayor. I know that Mosinee is a site of campaign events sometimes, or has been. I recall going to a John McCain event at the airport back in 2008. Would this be a in your capacity as a public servant, how would you balance the importance of protecting folks with the also there is a need and desire to hold political rallies and get the word out that way. How do you think about this?
Well, you're right. Central Wisconsin and actually Mosinee has been the site of some higher profile visits simply because we have the airport to accommodate presidents, vice presidents that have come in the past. So it happens to be a site for that. Unfortunately, when you are a mayor, you don't have a lot of control over that when they say they're coming to the community. I'm always excited to welcome.
You can't ban the vice president from
landing. That's beyond me.
Fair enough.
But I'm always excited to have him come, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat. It's an honor to have a president or a vice president come to your community. We've had those folks from both sides of the aisle come in the past. How I would balance it as to the extent I had any control as a small town mayor, I would certainly defer to the professionals. I'm in this state that we're in, I think we have to continue to listen to the experts, take direction from the experts, and learn that we as politicians are not the experts. We have to take what they give us, and we are a medium to get that to the community. So I would certainly defer to state, local, national public health officials to give direction on that. And I think the job that I could do is simply be a voice to relay that to the community and ask that they listen.
It just strikes me that we are in this is very unpredictable what the effects of this are. As I have been reflecting on that, I'm not used to being asked to change my life for any reason, really. But like we are seeing now. Things that are going to affect every American, and just, you know, life changes, and so it's unpredictable. Does that one way that voters might react to that is by not showing up at the polls or voting largely absentee. One way is that it might be that the people who are most motivated get the edge in upcoming elections. The economic effect is unknown. The way that people perceive the Trump administration's leadership in a time of crisis is going to affect the way people think about these questions. So I think that there's like a lot we don't know, but it feels important. That's about what I got. Yeah, please.
Yeah, and the major crisis in Sawyer County today is that there isn't a single roll of toilet paper in Walmart. But people really, I think, need to get realistic about how they're responding to this and not panic on that end, but prepare themselves. But you're right, it's a game changer. In this special race on May 12th, the focus of the country will be on it, in part because they're going to be looking at that 20-point spread from a couple years ago and ask the question, is it eroded or is it stable or does it get to be higher between this 7th district congressional race? Because if the dynamics of the percentage changes, you want to remember Trump won Wisconsin by something like 23,000 votes. He actually got, I think, less votes than Romney did 4 years earlier, but the drop off on the Democratic side was more like about 280,000 voters, and which gave him the state. The 7th congressional district is instrumental on that. And I'm going to argue again, Sawyer County, which has predicted the presidential winners over the course of 100 years. There was one time in the primary, Sawyer County aired, I think it was Nixon, Eisenhower, or Nixon and Goldwater or something, where the primary made a difference. The primary last time around went to Trump, went to Sanders. And when Clinton was nominated, the question was, would that trend continue? And it did. If you wanna be president of the United States, you got to come to the 7th district. You got to come to Sawyer County because of that. And we always welcome candidates from both sides of the aisle. The mayor Mosley said, having high profile candidates come to northern Wisconsin or central Wisconsin is not going to hurt our reputation as being a state that is essential in this presidential race in the end.
Well, yeah, it seems like we could save a lot of like money. We just have it in Sawyer County. Let have Sawyer County decide the president. It's save us all some trouble, you know.
There you go.
So Naomi, One thing Paul alluded to spending in the 7th Congressional District, and I know that you have looked closely at the numbers around the candidate spending and spending by outside groups. What do we know and what do we expect in the next couple months?
Well, what we know is that I think there was a bit of I was surprised by the amount of spending, of course, in the primary. We saw Jason Church. We saw Tom Tiffany. They each had about over $1 million to each of them in outside spending. And, of course, that's different than, you know, campaign fundraising, which was also robust for both of their campaigns. And as I reported, as the AP reported, it was the most expensive primary election in this congressional district, really in state history, which I think that's quite interesting. Of course, we're looking at a different story now. That's the story of two, you know, very strong candidates competing on the Republican side. Now going into the general election, you know, to me, that spending is still there. But I think voting turnout that we saw in the primary is also kind of a big indicator as we look at what's going to happen in May. We saw, you know, even though, you know, obviously Tiffany beat Church, we saw Zunker take, you know, the three counties, Ashland, Bayfield, Douglas. But really, between Church and Tiffany, they took about, and this is a very rough number, but about 2/3 of the voting share. And those are all Republican voters. And when it comes down to it, you got to look at the data, the statistics, the numbers. And I was looking at pivot counties. We have about 6 in the congressional district. So counties that voted for Obama both 2008, 2012, and then, you know, went to Trump in 2016. Looking at some of those pivot counties, they are so heavily red now, for example, Lincoln County, than they were back in 2008, 2012. They were very on the line in 2016. And now in this past primary, we saw Lincoln County turn out, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but about 20, 30 points in that, in the Republican direction. And looking at those different pivot counties, again, we're seeing them go stronger red with every election. So I see the trend continue to go red, just based on turnout numbers, also based on spending. You know, Zunker has not attracted the same level of fundraising, the same level of outside spending. One thing that's interesting to me is not to go back to coronavirus, but it's important for Zunker. I mean, Tiffany has a name recognition. Zunker has to be out there on the ground. She's got to be having those events to have a viable campaign. It's an uphill battle for her this entire way. I mean, it's, again, no secret. This is a very red district. And with that uphill battle, how is COVID-19 going to impact that? You know, if you're listening to experts, if, you know, we're all being told, stay away, social distancing. So how's that going to impact a campaign that is going to be very reliant on getting her name out there, getting her presence out there, getting the issues out there? And I think that's going to be a really big question mark going forward.
Right. I mean, one big way that an underdog campaign, a less funded campaign, can attempt to counteract that is with grassroots organization, which means canvassing and face-to-face interactions. Face-to-face interactions are still possible today, but they do become more complicated, and definitely events become more complicated. Whereas if you have a lot of money in your campaign, you can purchase television ads and okay. online ads. And those are things that people who are stuck in their home would be perfectly likely to be exposed to. So this is another area where there are unknowns. If you want to join our conversation, the number to call is 800-780-9742. Paul DeMaine, what do you see as ways?
Let me add to this. I was going to say we had an excellent turnout in the 7th Congressional District in this February primary, which is a rarity. That the turnout was something like 9.1%. The rest of Wisconsin was 2.3. Milwaukee County had 4.9. The Republicans did very well, but I would divide those votes by the couple of million dollars that it took to turn them out. They had something like 137% increase in their voter turnout, while the Republican or the Democratic side, they had about a 70% turnout or increase in voting from a primary in 2018. So both the Democratic and Republican parties did well in the turnout in the 7th Congressional District. The Republicans did very much better. But the question is how are there any more votes there in the end? When you divide the amount of money spent by the Zunker campaign and compare it to the amount of money per vote that was turned out that was spent on the GOP side, you better have a good turnout for spending a couple of million dollars in a primary.
All right. Well, we are going to take another break, and then we're going to talk more about Wisconsin politics in 2020 in the age of coronavirus. A programming note for our listeners. Beginning next week, Route 51 moves from Thursday to Friday mornings at 10 a.m. on the Ideas Network. You can join today's conversation by calling 800-780-9742. I'm Rob Menser, and this is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Route 51. I'm Rob Menser, in for Shireen Seewert. We're talking politics and elections with Naomi Coles, Brent Jacobson, and Paul DeMain. And we'd like to hear from you, too. The number to call is 800-780-9742. So there is another race that we haven't talked about on April 7th ballot, which is Wisconsin Supreme Court race. Republicans are definitely organized around Daniel Kelly's campaign against Jill Karofsky. She's supported by Democrats. This is, we always have to say, this is officially a nonpartisan race. I don't think anyone quite believes that, but at any rate, there are clear conservative and liberal preferences in the Supreme Court race. And Kelly is a current Supreme Court justice. He was appointed by Governor Walker, and this is his first time running for election to the court. So I think that the conventional wisdom not long ago had been that the Democratic presidential primary was going to swamp this race so much because presidential politics bring out so many more voters, and that that would be a major advantage to Jill Karofsky. Now that the Democratic race looks potentially less competitive, as Biden has pulled ahead. I don't know. Could that possibly be an advantage to Kelly, or somewhat counteract his disadvantage? Maybe is the way to put it. Brent Jacobson, I think you've been involved with this race some, or you're supporting Kelly. What do you see as the dynamic, and what's going to matter there?
Well, you know, in a Supreme Court race, it is unfortunate. Sometimes there seems to be gravitation from each side towards one candidate or the other, because it truly is not only a nonpartisan race, but remember, we're electing people to the judiciary who are expected to come in and apply the law regardless of politics. And I've seen Justice Kelly do that. As you know, outside of my job as mayor, I'm a full-time practicing attorney as well. So I have a little bit more insight into watching decisions as they come down. And I've seen Justice Kelly over the time apply the law as it's written, and apply the law strictly. And that's something I'm always looking for in a judge. That being said, I've walked into a lot of courtrooms in my 10 years now in practice, and regardless of the political attitudes of the judge that's sitting on the bench, I always have a great deal of respect for the bench, and I always believe that that person is going to apply the law as it's written and make a decision in accordance with the law. So the Supreme Court races, as they get partisan, are always tough for me just because of my job as an attorney, because I do hold that belief that we all took an oath, including those judges, when we became members of the bar, to apply the law. And regardless of the side they're on, I would hope that both would do that, and I'm confident they would.
Sure. Well, I don't want to be overly too cynical about that either. I think that maybe the right way to understand it is that a great majority of cases heard by the Supreme Court or any court are sort of like not political and don't necessarily break down that way. That's why you see a lot of unanimous decisions. But then there are those few cases that are, and in those cases, it does seem to matter a lot. I mean, that's just the reality, is that it seems to matter a lot, the sort of ideological background that the justice is coming from. So Naomi Coles, based on your reporting and people you talk to, do you think that we're going to see high voter turnout on April 7th? Do you think that one candidate or the other, or one party or the other, is favored at this point, based on what we can tell?
That's a good question. One thing that I'm for this, I'm going to pivot back to Michigan. You know, there was Bernie Sanders won Michigan back in 2016 by a very, you know, very strong margin. And that did not happen. We did not see that happen. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because that in order to revitalize his campaign, he had to take Michigan. And so when we're looking at April 7th, by April 7th, I think we're going to have a much clearer picture of who the front runner is. And if that front runner continues to be Biden, I think the question is, are Democrats going to show up? Is Biden going to have that drawing power to get people out who say we're more enthusiastic about other candidates? I mean, based on the Marquette Law School poll from a couple weeks ago, there was a lot of support behind Sanders, also a lot of support behind candidates who have since dropped out and coalesced behind Biden. And so with him coming in strong, with Sanders not picking up the momentum that he needed to in Michigan, I think the question becomes for Wisconsin, just how important, just how much of a say are we going to have in this Democratic primary come April 7th? And of course, then that impacts the turnout for that state Supreme Court race. And to be honest, I think the question I've seen from other political reporters is that, you know, that could potentially be a hit of turnout to Joe Kurofsky. Is that benefit going to go to Kelly? I think that's a question mark there, but I think that's, you know, that's going to have an impact.
Paul DeMain, do you have a view from the North Woods on the state Supreme Court race? These are typically lower profile races and not followed by any but maybe the most political junkies. Do you have reason? You know, have you seen the candidates up in Sawyer County? Do you think that there are signs that one or the other would be favored?
I don't really see a lot of action on the Supreme Court race. And of course, it's the most partisan of nonpartisan races that we have in the state. But I wanted to say something about what's left with the candidates. You know, when we talk about the Zunker campaign, it's kind of like we're stuck in this system with a bunch of elderly white guys. And I'm hoping that sometime we can see a diversity in politics, whether it's on the Democratic or Republican side, that I think begins to reflect what society looks like a little bit better. In the Supreme Court race, most of the tribes, I believe, are supporting Jill in this race simply because of their discussions with her in regards to tribal government issues, policies, sovereignty, and those kinds of things. And I wanted to mention one other real quick thing because we're getting in here. Now, this is a season of sapping, and a lot of people in the indigenous community are out in the woods trying to figure out, you know, to collect their sap and everything. I just did an inventory on my wild rice, white hominy corn, venison, and other things in relationship to the potential of a quarantine because of the coronavirus. You know, we've got to think about how we support people at the local level and how we generate the things we need at the local level rather than in this international society at times. And so I think the whole thing is going to be based on turnout, and it's going to be impacted directly by this potential virus. And so people just need to start getting their request in for the absentee ballots for both these elections in April and May 12th, and kind of a reminder that the congressional 7th district race, I think if it's close at all on either side, that this is a race that just doesn't end on May 12th. It goes up until November of this year for the regular election.
That's a fact. So we are near the end of our time. Brent Jacobson, what else? What haven't we talked about? There's a lot we haven't talked about. what haven't we talked about that that you think could make a difference in this year's elections?
Well, you know, looking back at the 7th congressional race that's coming up in May, I think on both sides, to not lose sight of the fact that if you want your candidate elected, the real simple thing is you'd have to go out and vote regardless of whether you think it's in the bag or if you think they have no chance. You know, I encourage Republicans to remain energized, being a Republican. We've had races that we thought were safe that we lost. Senate 12 back in, I think it was January of 2018. That was a special election that Republicans thought they'd win, but they didn't turn out to vote.
State Senator Patty Shockner, and that happens to be in the 7th Congressional District.
Yep. So I think it's just important on either side, regardless of how strong or weak you think your chances are of winning, to come out and vote. Everybody should do that.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for today on Route 51. I'm Rob Menser in this week for Shireen Seewert. And I'd like to thank our guests, Paul DeMaine, Brent Jacobson, and Naomi Coles for the conversation. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Our on-air producer today was Jane Ricker. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can listen again to today's program and find links to some of the things we talked about at wpr.org/Route 51. Next week, Route 51 moves from Thursday mornings to Friday mornings at 10 on the Ideas Network. We'll be hosting a mayoral debate between Wausau Mayor Robert Milkey and his challenger Katie Rosenberg. Until then, we're heading out of town.